Hello, my name is David Reichel. I am the director of the University of Wisconsin Integrative Medicine Program in the Department of Family Medicine. And this podcast is about non-pharmaceutical approaches to depression. We often have patients who have a hard time coming off their antidepressant, or they would like to try something before going on the antidepressant. And these are some options to help review some of the literature on things that we can do beyond the pill that may work as well and may be more successful at preventing a recurrence. The first, and if we could package this in a pill and give it to everybody, we would be all better off, that is exercise. There have been over 1,000 clinical trials showing the benefit of exercise on depression. It has been found to work as well as medications for depression, but where it trumps medications is that regular aerobic exercise is better at preventing a relapse of depression than the medication. So again, exercise is beneficial for more than just depression. It also will do so many other good things for the body. The second area that we like to explore is nutrition. And the research has shown that there is more depression associated with those who consume more sugar as well as caffeine. Now, this is the chicken and the egg issue. We don't know what comes first. You know, do people try and self-treat their depression with more sugar as well as caffeine to treat their fatigue? Probably so. We do know that when the body is under more stress, the mind stimulates a protein called neuroprotein Y that actually triggers a craving for carbohydrates. And then this makes sense. When we're under persistent stress, our body's in that fight or flight response, and our sympathetic nervous system is overactivated. And when we need that energy, our body first utilizes carbohydrates or sugar for energy, then it turns to fat, and then it turns to protein. So if we're under chronic stress and we're eating because of stress, our body is actually going to crave the food that will give us the quickest energy. And that's often white foods such as pastries or white bread, things made with bleached white flour. And that will give us more energy. But if we're not utilizing that energy to fight or flee or go exercise, that is going to create a rebound hypoglycemia due to the insulin release that our body secretes to try and store that sugar. And then we actually get in this high energy, low energy roller coaster, which can exacerbate depression. Again, caffeine too is often used to self-treat depression, but this can overstimulate the hypothalamic pituitary axis and mess up our normal circadian rhythms, and also potentially disrupt our sleep-wake cycle, which is so important in treating depression, is maintaining a good regenerative sleep. And whether we're treating chronic fatigue or persistent depression, maintaining a good sleep cycle is imperative. Now, from nutrition, let's go on to some nutritional supplements and see which ones may be beneficial at treating depression. We'll first start with omega-3 fatty acids. Omega-3 fatty acids, particularly the polyunsaturated fatty acids, enhance cell membrane fluidity much better than saturated fat. So that's why the deep Atlantic salmon are made mainly of these polyunsaturated fats, because despite the cold temperatures, their fats in their cells maintain fluidity, so their cell membranes can communicate at these cold temperatures. If one of the deep Atlantic salmon was made out of saturated fat, that we often see in red meat and pork, that deep Atlantic salmon would stiffen up like a board and wouldn't be able to swim anywhere, and the cell membrane would not be able to communicate. So we think that this is one of the potential mechanisms of action of how polyunsaturated omega-3 fatty acids seem to have a mood-elevating effect, in that they enhance cell-cell communication through the synaptic cleft, enhancing the effects of norepinephrine, serotonin, and the other hormones that we need for a positive mood. The research does show that supplements with a higher EPA-DHA ratio seem to have more of a mood-elevating effect in treating depression. So usually the ratio is about 3-2 EPA to DHA. If you're using omega-3 fatty acids for depression, look for a product that has a 7-1 ratio, much more EPA than DHA. Some products that we have no financial affiliation to, but have this ratio, include Omega Bright, which is found online, and Nordic Naturals has a super EPA product that also has a higher ratio of EPA to DHA. Omega-3 fatty acids also have health benefits in regards to stroke and heart attack prevention, and they also have a benefit in reducing systemic inflammation. The next supplement you may want to consider making sure, particularly in vegetarians with depression, is B vitamins. B vitamins are essential for the body's ability to produce serotonin, and one that has been found to enhance people's response to antidepressants, particularly SSRIs, is folic acid or folate. 1 milligram of folic acid, when added to antidepressants, enhanced response to that medication in those who in the past were non-responders to medical treatment, pharmaceutical treatment for depression. So particularly in vegetarians as well as others, make sure that they have a good source of B vitamins. Again, B vitamins are pretty inexpensive. They're the ones that turn your urine bright yellow. They're not hard to make, and this isn't something you need to spend a lot of money on. The companies have no reason not to put the B vitamins in the pill, so they don't need the most expensive B vitamin, but they should get a good B50 or B100 complex vitamin, and that means that that multivitamin, the B vitamin, has about 50 micrograms or milligrams or 100 based on whether you get the B50 or B100 of most of the B vitamins. The next supplement that has been studied much better in Europe than it has in the United States is SAMe, big S-A-M, little E, S-adenosyl L-methionine. This supplement has been found to be beneficial for three rather unrelated conditions. The first is depression, the second is osteoarthritis, and the third is liver disease. One might think, why these three relatively unrelated conditions? Well, SAMe is thought to work at least in part by donating methyl groups. Methyl groups are needed to enhance cell membrane communication, specifically with serotonin, norepinephrine, and dopamine. So SAMe has been found to work as well as some antidepressants with fewer side effects. One randomized controlled study found it to work as well as imipramine, but it's not without side effects. SAMe can have a stimulating effect, and you don't want to give it too close to bedtime because it can cause insomnia. And you don't want to give it to anybody with bipolar disease because it can stimulate mania. The dose is generally 400 to 600 milligrams a day. This supplement does oxidize, so you want to buy it in blister packs and keep it in the refrigerator, because if it's left out in the open, it'll go bad quickly. The next supplement is hydroxytryptophan, or 5-HTP. 5-HTP is a precursor to serotonin. The cascade first starts with L-tryptophan. L-tryptophan is converted to 5-HTP, which is then converted to serotonin. There's some promising research on the benefits of this supplement in treating depression. Initially, this was taken off the market because one company was found to have a contaminant that stimulated eosinophilia myalgia syndrome. This, again, was isolated to one company, and now it's back on the market and appears to be safe. The dose is 150 to 300 milligrams a day. Again, there's not as much research on this supplement as I would like, but it appears to be relatively safe, and it's something that you can try if someone wants to avoid pharmaceutical treatment of their depression. The next one, which has been quite well studied for mild to moderate depression, is St. John's wort. St. John's wort, through a Cochrane review, is found to be beneficial for mild to moderate depression, not severe depression, but then again, pharmaceuticals aren't good for severe depression either. Those are often the more resistant cases. The things you have to keep in mind when using St. John's wort is it does trigger activity of the cytochrome P450 enzymes in the liver. So it enhances metabolism of other drugs. So if you use St. John's wort with birth control pills or antiretrovirals, it may actually reduce serum levels of those drugs. I feel comfortable using St. John's wort if someone is on a lot of other medications. If you do want to use St. John's wort when they're on other medications, make sure you dose it at different times of the day. Also, St. John's wort can stimulate some photodermatitis, so make sure that your patients are using sunblock or using sun protection when taking this botanical. Remember, botanicals take a little bit longer to work, sometimes up to 4 weeks, sometimes six, than pharmaceuticals, which often are 10 to 14 days. So just in summary, things that can be helpful for depression include aerobic exercise, B vitamins, including folic acid, fish oil, particularly with a higher ratio of EPA to DHA, SAMe, which seems to work through methyl donors and enhances cell membrane communication, as well as St. John's wort. And the dose of St. John's wort is approximately 450 milligrams twice a day or 300 milligrams three times a day. The last area I'd like to focus on for the treatment of depression are mind-body influences. And the reason I think that this one is so important is that this requires the introspective process that allows us to understand and learn from our symptoms. And in doing this, maybe we won't need to use as many supplements, nutraceuticals, pharmaceuticals for the treatment of depression, because if we can encourage the person to learn how things in their lives and how their perceptions of things around them can influence their symptoms, then we can really empower them to understand how they can make life changes so depression is less likely to reoccur. Again, this is in the face of multiple influences of depression. Some people, despite doing all this stuff, still have very serious disease that require a team approach, including consultations with our psychology and psychiatry colleagues. So the first one that has been found to work as well as pharmaceuticals is psychotherapy. And this is a tried and true therapy that helps the individual take a negative thought and learn how to replace them with more positive ones to increase their sense of control and positive expectation. And who wouldn't feel better from talking to a compassionate human being about life stressors? And I think this should be required for everybody, at least at some point in their life. Another thing that symptoms allow us to do is learn from our symptoms and understand why they're there. And if you look at the Buddhist traditions, they look at depression as a degree of suffering. And suffering in that tradition is something to learn from so they can overcome or transcend the suffering. And it's interesting, in Japan, that arose from a Buddhist culture, suffering in Japan was thought to be something to learn from. It was part of their culture. Unfortunately, depression was very prevalent in Japan, and actually they had one of the higher suicide rates. The pharmaceutical companies realized the importance of a better treatment for depression in Japan, and they started to market the pharmaceuticals, and this actually changed the culture to where that suffering became a disease, where that culture started to rely more on the external pill for healing versus encouraging that introspective process of asking the question, why is this suffering here and how can I overcome it? So both are important, but if that pendulum swings too far to just relying on the pill for our health and well-being, we really miss out on learning from the symptom and understanding how we can make changes in our life to result in more happiness and more well-being. So one of the key things that we try and teach in integrative medicine is how to become more aware of our emotions. Because if you look at how a non-physical emotion becomes physical, there's a great pathophysiological connection, such as some of the highest risk factors for heart disease, actually tied for number two in the Inner Heart Study, one of the largest studies done on this planet to look at the risk factors for heart disease. Stress, a non-physical emotional process, was the second leading cause of heart disease on this planet. And if you understand how an emotion becomes a physical process, anger or sadness or hostility stimulates the hypothalamic pituitary axis that then through multiple chemicals influences immunity, sympathetic tone, and inflammation. And we know that when people are depressed, they have more pain, they have a higher risk of heart disease or heart attack. And if we don't step back and learn from this emotion, this cycle, this repetitive cycle, continues over time and can exacerbate the progression of chronic disease. Whereas if we take a time out, stop and pause and become more aware of why that emotion is there and how we can develop understanding of what we need to overcome it or change it from a negative emotion to a positive emotion, then we realize that, hey, we're empowered to really change this process through our conscious awareness. So taking time and just being present and being aware of these emotions and understanding where they came from and how we can change them can change a negative emotion such as anger or sadness to a positive one such as compassion and peace and happiness. And that has a whole different set of triggers within our hypothalamic pituitary axis, our norepinephrine, serotonin, and dopamine, which has a much healthier effect on our immune system, our atherosclerotic plaque, our chronic inflammation, and our mood. What we teach in mindfulness meditation and other mind-body therapies that our health psychology colleagues promote so well is learning from these emotions to understand how we can overcome them. There are some tools that we can encourage our patients to use. One is called the FIT protocol, and FIT stands for feelings, images, and talk. And when we feel a negative emotion such as hate or hostility or anger, take a time out, count to 10, whatever allows you to pause and become more aware of that emotion, and recognize the feelings that you are experiencing. So F is feelings. And then recognize what images come to mind with that emotion. So I is images. And then recognize and become aware of your self-talk. What's going on in your mind's chatter that might be related to this emotion. So that FIT, feelings, images, and talk, is one tool that we can encourage our patients to just take a time out and learn how this emotion has become present and how we can learn to recognize why it's there and develop understanding so we can then change it for the future. Mark Twain said, "I'm an old man and I've lived a great many troubles and some of them actually happened." And I think that's a great example of this, that a lot of the chaos and trauma is self-created in our own mind. And until we take time out and clear the clutter, we don't have motivation to really connect with those things that give us joy. So it is very important that we take a time out, observe these emotions, and once we observe them, they come into our awareness so we can transform them. And this is what's taught in mindfulness stress reduction. Mindfulness means becoming more present in the moment, where most of our lives, our mind is spent in memories of the past or desires of the future. And if you can find a mindfulness stress reduction program in your area, that can be a great asset in helping create understanding and empower our patients to understand how they can overcome some of these ruts that our lives can get stuck in over time. Forgiveness is another great example of a healing process, that we don't forgive to say that what someone did or said was right. We forgive because we don't want to carry around that burden or that weight for years to come. And that feeling of weight on our shoulders has an effect on our norepinephrine and serotonin and our overall well-being. So Martin Luther King said, "I choose to stick with love because hate is too great a burden to bear." And this is what we're talking about. And the process of forgiveness is recognizing why we might hold emotions of anger towards a certain event or a person and letting them go. Letting them go because holding on to that negative emotion only hurts ourselves over the long haul. Journaling is another great way to help express these emotions. And once we get them out of our subconscious into our conscious, our body often no longer has to sympathize through the expression of symptoms, whether it's pain or depression. William Boyd, a pathologist at the turn of the century, said, "The sorrow that hath no vent in tears may make other organs weep." And we see this day in and day out in primary care. And journaling allows this process to go from our subconscious into our consciousness. And no one has to read it, but the therapeutic process comes in that person writing about it. So we encourage people, if they're ready, if they're not ready, don't push it, because that can actually do more harm than good. But if they're ready to maybe go to some events in their lives that were hurtful, have them write about it. Have them just catharse on paper. Don't worry about punctuation or their writing style. And if they can't think of what to write next, just repeat what they were writing before. And then after they're done catharsing, have them do this for 15 to 20 minutes. Have them write down what they learned from it. Because with any traumatic or trying event, it often can be a great teacher. So I often encourage them to write about what they learned after that. And then after they're done, they can burn it up, add a little ceremony to the process where they burn it up, that stressor, and they let the wind carry it away, or they tear it up. Some people choose to keep it in a diary, but again, the therapeutic process comes in them expressing it, getting it out of their subconscious into the conscious mind so the body no longer has to sympathize. Another thing that can be very helpful in treating depression or positive affirmations. And this is kind of the tail wagging the dog, but has been found to be very helpful. One of those that's been around for 2,500 years is a loving kindness meditation. And I figure something that's been around for 2,500 years can't be all bad. And I like to have my patients recite the following four lines. May I be filled with loving kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. And may I be happy. I have them always start with themselves. So we always have to start with ourselves before we can do this for others. So start, may I be filled with loving kindness. Then after you start with yourself, you then direct this to someone who might be pissing you off a little bit, or someone who's giving you some challenges. And then you direct this loving kindness meditation to them. And this positive affirmation can really create a positive emotion within the body that results in good things versus negative things. There's another process called Tonglen. Tonglen, T-O-N-G-L-E-N, is a Tibetan word that means sending and taking. This involves breathing in a negative emotion, transforming it within yourself, and breathing out a positive one. It's kind of imagine that you are the liver and your job is to detoxify the negative emotion. You breathe it in, you transform it into a positive emotion, and then you breathe it out. This is an old technique that also is a way that might help empower our patients to really understand how they can take some of these negative emotions and transform them into positive ones. So these are just some techniques that may prove helpful for you. But remember, match them to the beliefs and values of your patients so you don't give them something that won't resonate with what would be most agreeable to them. So hopefully these are some more tools that may enhance your relationship-centered care, which is really at the foundation of what facilitates healing the most is your relationship with your patients. And that's, I think, why primary care is so important. Great. Thanks for listening and have a great day. Bye-bye.